Hare Krishna. Welcome all of you all to day 5 of the Journey of Self-Discovery course. So if you all have survived coming for the 5 days, that means most probably you all will make it one more day. I know for many of you all this might be your first experience of coming for, you know, a course like this for such a long duration. And I hope the whole experience has been a positive and good one. So today we are discussing the subject matter of why do bad things happen to good people. So this is a subject matter that almost everyone at some point of time or the other discusses, and everyone at some point of time or the other feels very strongly about. So unless we understand this properly from a proper logical and a systematic perspective, it will be very difficult to handle life stably. In fact, at different stages in our life, this knowledge becomes crucially important, you know, because as I said, we began with the understanding that this world is dukkhalai, a place of misery. And being dukkhalai, being a place of misery, miseries are going to come. Difficulties are going to come. So when difficulties come, how do we handle them? And how do we really understand why they come in our life? That's when we'll be able to live life more soberly and live life in a wholesome way. Otherwise, one misery comes into your life and then it shadows all the positive things that happen in life completely. And then, you know, the only thing that you think about and the only thing you remember is the miseries that go on in life. Therefore, the Gita gives us a philosophical approach towards life. And this philosophical approach towards life helps a lot. In fact, when people go through miseries, nothing can help them. Practically, there is nothing that, you know, there's nothing in this world that can really give them a solution to why they go through certain things. And when they go through such things, that is a time when the Gita philosophy, if it is understood properly, it can really help and aid them in a positive way. So, to begin this session, I would like to tell a very interesting story. This is a story of one old lady. She lost her son. And when she lost her son, she came to Gautam Buddha. And she asked him that, you know, can you help me revive my son? So Buddha, he told her that I'll help you on one condition. You go and get some rice from any house that has not experienced a death yet. And when you get that rice, I'll immediately revive this boy. So she started running around, you know, going to her neighbors, going to people around. And every house she went to, she knocked the door and asked them for a little rice. They were happy to give rice. But when she told the condition that you should not have had any death in your house, they said, no. My uncle died. My wife died. My son died. Somebody or the other had died in that house. So practically after running through the whole village, she couldn't even find one house where no death had happened. Then she came back to Gautam Buddha, much more enlightened, understanding the fact that we cannot avoid the concept of death. So, just like this lady is trying to find some source or reviving her misery, or, you know, trying to understand how to come out of the negativity that she went through, all of us in our life, we're trying to find solutions to some negative situation that we are in. We're trying to find a solution where the negative situation we are in will get replaced and come back to the original positive situation that we were before. Many times, rather than trying to find a replacement for the negative situation or trying to revive back the old positive situation, we have to realign our thoughts. We have to realign our understanding of life. And we have to understand life from a totally different perspective. That is what this whole session is about. So, in this world, all our dealings, whether it is as youngsters, whether it is in the older generation, all our dealings are filled with frustrations and they actually let us down. Always young boys and girls who are studying, answering exams, they always complain that when we answer exams, it's not that all the time you get marks as per, you know, the way you, the effort that you put in, you know. In fact, it almost always happens opposite. I put certain effort, I get more marks. And I put less effort, I get, you know, I put more effort and I get less marks, you know. So it's not always exactly your effort and your, the result that you get, you know. That's not how the world works. In fact, people, when they try to control their lives in a way that is absolutely predictable, they go through frustrations. Every human being wants to plan his life to perfection. From the first day till the last day, they want to plan as perfectly as possible. But when they realize at some point of time, things are not working as my plan, that's when they get frustrated. Especially when they are attached to their plan. Especially when they feel that their plan has been perfect. In fact, most people feel that God is very powerful. They don't doubt that fact that God is all powerful. But they have a doubt about His capacity, about His knowledge abilities. So they feel that God should use His power and God should use my knowledge. I will tell God what to do because He is dull. He doesn't have so much intelligence to understand. So I'll tell Him what to do and He uses His power and does what I want. So most people prefer to plan their life in such a way that it is perfect, everything nice. But then when God's plan comes and God's intelligence comes, they feel that, array, there's something is wrong over here. So when we only understand these two things, that God is not just all powerful, He's also all knowledgeable. Everything that happens in our life is also within the knowledge and purview of God. Unfortunately, when we don't understand this, we go through negativities in life. So I would like to share with you all a very interesting story. If you remember, on day two we had discussed that we will be discussing this particular story about, this is a story of Charles Darwin. So Charles Darwin, he proposed a theory which is known as the origin of species. And practically all of us have come across the evolution theory, you know, the chemical evolution theory, the origin of species. And all of us feel that human beings have come from animal, from apes, from monkeys, and so on and so forth. So what was the inspiration for Charles Darwin to bring up this theory? This brings us to the first understanding of life. This understanding of life is known as atheism. Why or what exactly is atheism? So Charles Darwin, he was a very devout Christian, very regularly going to the church and very strongly believing in God. But unfortunately, three things happened in his life that really put him off. The first thing that happened was that whenever he would go to the church, whenever he would hear the priest speaking, he would always hear about miracles. He'd always hear about something mysterious that has happened. So every time he would hear about a miracle, he would get he would expect one, but he would never see a miracle. He would never see miracles happening, though he would constantly keep hearing about them. The second thing that he got really frustrated about was the fact that he observed that though the priests and the people who are in the renounced order are supposed to have given up everything, they had so much attachment to power, they had so much attachment to control, and they had so much attachment to handling people in a way as if they controlled them. He couldn't take that. He couldn't take the fact that somebody who is supposed to be in the renounced order and completely detached, why is that person becoming so attached to power and position? And a third thing that happened in his life that really put him off was the fact that he had a young son, and this boy, he died a very unnatural death, and he had died an early death. So when all the three combined together, Charles Darwin, he completely broke down. And in fact, from that day onwards, Charles Darwin decided in his life that he is going to set out in the world and prove two things. So he went out into the world to prove these two things. So he went out with a conclusion, basically. He said he wanted to prove that God is not the creator, and he wanted to prove that God is not the controller. So he set out to prove these two things, you know. And then if you study his whole theory, his whole understanding just focuses and brings out these two things very strongly. The whole concept of chemical evolution, how life originated from just, you know, chemicals. There's no Atma, there's no concept of the soul. And also about how God is not just not the creator, but he's not even the controller. So the whole evolution theory means that automatically everything is happening on its own. You don't need God. You know, whenever some problem comes, nature solves its own problems, evolves into a higher species, evolves into a better mechanism, and then the problems get solved. So just by these two theories, he dealt with both the original conclusions that he came up with. God is not the creator and God is not the controller. But where was the problem? Where did the problem begin? The problem began by these three problems. First is that he couldn't see miracles. Second is the power that the priests and the people who are managing the church were having too much. And then the third is his young son who died unnaturally. So the combination of these two things, it made him go and find a conclusion. And he went and did his research. And all his research was, moving towards this conclusion. And naturally, everything that he saw, he tried to extrapolate, interpolate, and do whatever it possible and come to this particular conclusion. And some of the things are so hilarious and funny, you know. It's not even possible to believe such things. So this is known as the first concept, which is atheism. The second concept that we will discuss today is known as confucianism. Atheism means God is neither the creator nor the controller. Confucianism means I don't know if God is the creator or the controller. I'm confused, basically. So one time there was a family who wanted to go to Europe, and they had saved a huge amount of money just to go on this bond voyage on the Titanic to Europe. They saved so much. They had such strong aspirations in life that they wanted to, achieve this voyage. So the whole family had been booked, and they were supposed to set a sail 14 days later. But just before, 2 weeks before they were supposed to sail, the son in that family, he got bitten by a dog. And, in those times, there was no, proper treatment. So the person has to be quarantined. So the doctors told him he has to be quarantined for 14 days. He cannot travel. And naturally, they couldn't go on the journey. So when they couldn't go on the journey, they started cursing God. They said, "What kind of a person are you? We saved so much. We had so much aspiration. And finally, when you're going to go, this is what you do to us. We have lost faith in you." And the same people, after the Titanic drowned, it sank, the same people started saying, "Wow, what a person God is. God knew that, this is going to happen, and therefore he didn't allow us to go there." So sometimes people feel that, God is there, God is the creator and God is the controller. And sometimes people feel like God is not there. He's neither the creator nor the controller. So this is known as confusion. So why does God do certain things to us which we feel are wrong? So there is a very interesting story to make us understand this. One time there was a very wealthy man. This man was extremely wealthy, but at the same time extremely charitable. He loved to help people. So every day in the morning, he would open his doors and allow everybody to come, and whoever wants would get as much as they want. So people would come in hundreds to receive gifts from him, to receive wealth from him, and he would keep giving profusely. But one day he was speaking to his friend and he was expressing what is there in his heart. He told his friend that though he is giving so much, he's seeing that practically no one among the people who receive his gifts or his charity is grateful to what he's doing. In fact, his complaint was nobody was even looking at him, not even expressing gratitude. not even acknowledging his presence practically. The only thing they were doing was taking and going away and coming back to take more. So this friend of his gave him a very innovative idea. He told them, tomorrow morning when the time comes to open the door, don't open the door. Stand on the balcony. And when people come to receive gifts, don't give them gifts. Throw stones on them. This man, he said, why would I do that? The friend said, no, just listen to me. Do it. You'll understand. And then this man said, okay, let me do it. So he went on top of his balcony, opened the balcony door. Hundreds of people were gathered there. And instead of sharing his wealth, he started throwing stones on them. One after another. All stones were hitting people. And as soon as the stones started hitting people, they started looking up. He said, who is this fellow who is throwing stones? And they started looking at him and shouting at him. This man, first time he saw people looking at him. In so many days that he was giving wealth, nobody saw him only. First time now that he's throwing stones, people started looking at him. Unfortunately, God has to do this sometimes. God is giving us so much and much, much more than what we deserve and what we desire. But unfortunately, the lack of gratitude and the lack of reciprocation is so intense that sometimes God has to just wake us up by throwing some one or two stones of misery on our life. And then when the stones comes, that is the time we get up, you know. Every Hindi movie you will find, you know, when the hero is in trouble, he'll go to a temple, bang the bell, and he'll say, "Tum Bhagwan ho ya patthar ki murti ho," you know, and start questioning God. All that, you know, when everything was normal, nothing happened. He never went there. And suddenly when things go wrong, that is the time when you start recognizing God. So sometimes when we look at situations in our life, and especially situations that are negative, situations that are miserable, those are the times specifically that we remember God. Those are the times that we out of frustration also, but at least we recognize that somebody is, you know, messing around in my life, right? But otherwise, when things are normal, we don't express our gratitude at all. We don't even feel that we need to express our gratitude for what is happening for us. The third way of looking at life is a very interesting way. This is a man named Arthur Ashe. This man was one of the world's greatest tennis champions. This man won the Wimbledon about 7 times consecutively. So after a great amount of success in his life, he contracted a disease by which he was going to die in about 6 months. And when the world came to know that he had this disease, a lot of people started writing to him, his fans started writing to him. So one man wrote to Arthur Ashe asking him a question. He said, out of millions of people in this world, why did God do only this only to you? Why not to me? Why not to anybody else? And Arthur Ashe replied to that letter in a very interesting way. So he said, every year about 500 million people begin to learn tennis, out of which only 500,000 people actually learn how to play, out of which only 50,000 people learn professional tennis, and out of which only 5,000 enter into the Grand Slam, and only 50 qualify to win the Wimbledon, qualify for the Wimbledons, and only 4 reach the semifinals, and 2 reach the final, and only 1 wins. And Arthur Ashe said, I won 7 times. And he said, every time I held up that cup, I never asked God, why me? He said, now that I have this disease, what right do I have to ask God, why me? So this is a concept which is known as theism. Theism essentially means two things. God is the creator and God is the controller. That means essentially, whatever happens to us in our life, it is not happening haphazardly. It is not happening just like that. It is not happening, you know, because of a lack of control. Everything that is happening in our life is happening for a certain reason and a certain background, which we may not understand. That's fine. But definitely there is control. So this is known as theism. So we just spoke about atheism, which means God is not the controller and God is not the creator. And then we spoke about deism, which means that, we spoke about confusion, which means that we don't know whether God is a controller or creator. And then we spoke about theism, which means God is the creator and the controller. So now, just to kind of give you all an overview of the entire Gita, the Bhagavad Gita is essentially made up of five topics. The whole Gita, the 700 verses of the Gita, essentially talk about five subject matters. The first subject matter is Ishvara or God. The second is Jiva or the Atma or the soul. The third is Prakriti or material nature. The fourth is Kala or time factor. And fifth is Karma or activities. So till today, till for the last 4 days, we have been studying the first two subject matters in depth. We studied a lot about who Ishvara is, who God is, does he exist, and who exactly he is. We studied that. And then we spoke a lot about what is Jiva, the Atma, the soul. We discussed a lot about that. Today, we're going to discuss the next three. What is Prakriti or material nature? What is Kala or time factor? And what is Karma or activities? So, yesterday, actually we began our the journey of self-discovery course by talking about the material world, which is a place of misery, dukkhalai. And the place where we are in is the material world. So we said that if there is a material world which is a place of misery, dukkhalai, there has to be a sukhalai. There has to be a place of joy. So if the material world is a miserable place, there has to be a spiritual world which is a beautiful place, which is a place of happiness. One time there was a princess who was standing in her balcony wearing a diamond necklace. And she was playing with a diamond necklace. Suddenly a crow came, just snatched her necklace and flew away. So this princess started panicking. She loved that necklace. So the prince told her, "Don't worry, I'll get you another one. Let it go." She said, "No, I want that one only." And then the prince, you know, he declared in the kingdom that anybody who finds a diamond necklace will get a nice reward. So people started looking for this diamond necklace. One man was walking in the forest and he was passing by a lake. And as he was passing by a lake, he saw something glittering, an extremely beautiful, you know, thing glittering. And then he realized that's the diamond necklace I was looking for. And, you know, he jumped into the water to try to find the necklace. But after swimming a lot, he couldn't find it. So he came out to have a better vision of where the necklace is. And jumped in again. He still couldn't find it. There was one wise man who was observing this actions. And this wise man told him, "Come on, why are you wasting time inside the water? The necklace is on the tree hanging on top. You're only seeing the reflection below." And then he climbed the tree and he got the necklace. So just like this man is trying to find a diamond necklace in the wrong place, similarly, the diamond necklace is there. That means the concept of happiness is there. But unfortunately, just like this man, instead of looking up on the tree, we're looking into the water. So we are trying desperately to hold on to grab happiness in this world in a place where the happiness doesn't exist. Whatever is there over here is only a reflection of the real happiness. So therefore, whatever experience of happiness that we have in this world is only a flickering, illusory, and a very, very short-lived one. And therefore, did I tell you all the difference between Sukha and Ananda on day one? I think I told you. So the difference between Sukha and Ananda is that the pleasure that we get, which is the gap between two miseries, that is what we experience in the material world. So one misery is just come and another misery is just going to come. And between the two, what we experience is what we experience happiness in this material world, which is a very small reflection of the one in the spiritual world. So if the reflection itself, if that small experience itself gives us so much joy, what to speak of the real experience, how much it is going to give us, right? And therefore, for us to understand what is this material and spiritual world, we need to understand this whole concept better. So material world is said to be 1/4 of the entire creation of God. And 3/4 of the entire creation of God is the spiritual world. So essentially, we are living in a very, very tiny portion. Material world is compared to a cloud in the sky. The sky is huge and cloud is only one small portion of the sky. So the 3/4 of creation of God is the spiritual world, which we have no access to at this point of time. What we have access to is the material world, and that too is only 1/4 of creation. And that too within the material world also, we have very limited access, only one planet practically. And that too within that planet also, how much access do we have? Hardly, you know, at least 60-70% of this planet itself is water, you know, the oceans are covering this planet. So how much access do we really have? One plane gets lost in the ocean and it takes us 6 months and we're not even able to find it. So you can imagine, you know, what is the size of the ocean? So what is the material world or Prakriti? Prakriti means nature or the external nature of God. So where has the soul come from? The soul, the Atma, all of us, have come from the spiritual world. And where have we come to? We have come to the material world. So the question now is, if we have come from the spiritual world and we have come to the material world, why did God create this material world, which is Dukkhalay? The question is, you know, there is Sukkhalay somewhere, there is a place of happiness somewhere, and we were all there originally over there. Now what is the need of creating one more, you know, place of misery, a place which is like, you know, not such a exciting place, and it's a place of you know, the real problems. Why did God have to create a Dukkhalay? To understand this, let us just discuss the planning of a city. When a city is planned, any city in this world, what are the different things that are taken care or made sure that a city contains? Definitely a city contains, you know, skyscraper buildings and all kinds of housing societies. The city contains hospitals, maternity homes. A city contains universities, places of education where people can go on to study. A city contains sports grounds, you know, places where people can have entertainment. The city contains malls and shopping complexes. The city contains gardens, you know, places where you can, you know, spend your time in leisure. The city definitely contains theaters and auditoriums where one can go to learn things and be entertained. The city contains roads and highways, bridges. The city contains railway stations, transport mechanisms. It contains an airport. It contains so many facilities. But every city, invariably, whatever city it may be, it also contains a prison house. The question is, why does every city contain a prison house? At least the major ones do contain prison house. Now, why do we need prison houses? The answer is very simple. There will be some people for sure who are not abiding to the law. And to house those people and make sure those people are not roaming around freely, we have prison houses. Apparently, if you see from a practical point of view, the prison house occupies a lot of space. If that much space is available and given to some, you know, developers, they would have been so happy. In fact, some of the prime locations in the city are prison houses, you know, unfortunately. And can you imagine, why would a government, at the cost of economy, at the cost of so much important, you know, resources, invest in a prison house? That means, from the perspective of the government, the prison house is important. And what happens in a prison house? Essentially, the prison house is meant for two things. The first thing the prison house is meant for is rectification. So when you are sent to the prison house, you are sent for rectification. Kuch toh gadbad kiya hai, iske liye jail jana padta hai. Of course, nowadays people go to jail for, you know, safety. Jail is a safe place, you know, outside the jail is dangerous, you know. So many people go to jail purposely to be safe. Many people go to jail for, you know, you get basic food, clothing, shelter, many problems are solved. So they do a crime and they are sent into jail. So nowadays police are rejecting people from jail because they know that is the intention for which people come. But essentially the jail is meant for rectification. And the jail is meant to offer pain and punishment. Now, can you imagine a prison house or a jail where the prisoners are treated very nicely? 5-star treatment, you know. They are given good, you know, massage every day in the evening. and they're given, you know, bhelpuri and pani puri and, you know, pav bhaji and, you know, gulab jamun every day, you know. I mean, would they experience jail as a place of misery? In fact, they will say that this is the best place. You don't get all these things outside. So jail means there has to be pain and there has to be punishment. So essentially, the nature of this world is, the reason this world is created, the material world is created, is like a prison house. And it offers two things. It offers a place of rectification and it offers pain and punishment. So what is the pain that this the material world offers us? The four things: birth, old age, disease, and death. So these are four pains that the material world offers us. And the three punishments that the material world offers us are adi atmik klesh, miseries caused by the body and the mind, adi bhautik klesh, miseries caused by other living entities, and adi devik klesh, miseries caused by natural disasters. So tell me one thing, when people go through this pain and punishment, is it not really hurting? It is extremely hurting when somebody goes through the phase of a disease. I mean, you always become philosophical when you go through disease, right? You always think, you know, why am I suffering like this, you know? And you feel very frustrated. When you see a death in your family, when you see somebody close to you dying, you immediately again start thinking, why is it happening to me, you know? So the pain and punishment is very apparent in these seven situations of life, you know? When one goes through birth, old age, disease, and death, and when one goes through miseries caused by the body and the mind, when one goes through miseries caused by other living entities, and when one goes through miseries caused by natural disturbances, you immediately start questioning. And that is the purpose of keeping us in a jail, in the material world. Now, the question is, in a jail, who takes care, who makes sure that the prisoners are intact? They don't run away. There's a jailer. There is somebody who is there making sure that, you know, there is somebody, you know, not the prisoners don't escape. There are bars, there are guards, there are people with guns, there are electrical wirings, all kind of high walls, all kind of security measures are there to make sure that this guy doesn't run away, right? So essentially, similarly, just like we have a guard who takes care of the jail, we have a personality who takes care of this. This is Durga Devi. The word Durga essentially comes from the word Durga. Durga means fortress. That means a place where you cannot escape from. So Durga Devi is the jailer of this material world. So she makes sure that people in this world remain. They don't escape easily. But the most amazing thing is, Durga Devi's jail is a fascinating jail. Fascinating jail. It is a high-tech jail. You know why? There are no bars. Do you feel, you know, inside your house, cage mein hai? Aisa nahi lagta hai. Aisa lag raha hai ki hum khula jagah mein ghoom rahe hai. Hum kaidi nahi hai. Maja aata hai, you know. And the worst part is that no criminal wants to escape from this jail at all. किसी को बाहर जाना ही नहीं है, सबको इधर ही रहना है. सो कैन यू इमेजिन व्हाट एन एक्सपर्ट जेलर शी इज. शी हैज क्रिएटेड अ जेल विच इज अ जेल फॉर श्योर, बट दिस जेल हैज नो बार्स, दिस जेल हैज नो वॉल्स, दिस जेल हैज नो गार्ड्स, एंड दिस जेल इज कंप्लीटली ओपन, बट स्टिल नोबडी वॉन्ट्स टू गो आउट ऑफ दिस जेल एट ऑल. एंड द वे शी कंट्रोल्स दिस जेल इज बाय हर इल्यूजरी एनर्जी. शी क्रिएट्स, यू नो, सम फैसिनेटिंग एक्सपीरियंसेस by which people feel, wow, kya jagah hai hai, mujhe idhar chhod ke jana hi nahi hai mujhe. You know, one time there was a man who was running away from a tiger, and this tiger was chasing him. This man was desperately running away for his life. Somehow or the other he escaped, but he slipped off and fell off a cliff. And when he was falling off a cliff, he hit a beehive and he fell off. And as he was falling off the cliff, he somehow caught hold of something. And it happened to be a branch of a small, you know, plant that was jutting out. And he was just saved, you know, hanging on the cliff. But At least he was saved from the tiger on top. The tiger looking at him from top. He couldn't climb up anymore. Tiger was there. And then he looked below. There was a crocodile below with his mouth open. Now this guy is in a big trouble. On top tiger and below crocodile. And this guy is hanging in between. And he was saying, at least I am safe here for some time, you know. And just when he said that, he saw that the branch that he was holding on to, there were two rats on it. Black rat, one black rat and a white rat. And they were biting that branch slowly. So this guy, he was really miserable now. Tiger on top, crocodile below, and rats on the branch. And then to make it even worse, when he hit that honey beehive, all those bees got agitated. And they came and started biting his face. All over his face, you know, there were bees were stinging like anything. He was going through crazy pain. But in the midst of all this, something amazing happened. You know what happened? The honeycomb which he hit, one drop of honey fell from it. And it fell straight on his tongue. And this man, the moment he experienced that one drop of honey on his tongue, he said, wow, this is life. I don't mind the tiger, I don't mind the crocodile, I don't mind the rats, I don't mind anything. If I get this one drop of honey regularly, I'm okay. This is the jail that we are in. The tiger on top is time that is chasing us, constantly chasing us. The crocodile below is death that is waiting to devour us. The two rats on top, they are like the day and night, black and white. The bees that are stinging us is the three miseries, Adi Bhautik, Adi Devik and Adi Atmik Klesh. Constantly biting us and constantly troubling us, you know. And in the midst of all that, that one drop of honey is the happiness that we experience in this world. And that happiness is experienced, you know, the happiness that people experience, it is so insignificant for all that trouble. Itna mehnat karne ke baad, milta kitna hai? Itna sa. But that happiness is so attractive that people are ready to do anything. Come again and again to the material world, again and again to the material world to gain that one drop of happiness. So essentially, Durga Devi is the expert here. This is all her job of just making sure that we are in such an illusion that we don't want to get out only. Can you imagine if all the jails in this world has to become like this? What would happen? No need of security, no need of so much, you know, effort. But pain and punishment continue happening. And rectification also happens here. So, Durga Devi has a Trishul. The Trishul, the three spokes of the Trishul, indicate the three miseries. Adhyatmik, Adi Devik, and Adi Bhautik Klesh. So, she constantly keeps poking us with the Trishul, you know, from one from this side, one from that side, and sometimes all the three together, you know. And the reason she does that is to make sure that we are miserable. Just when we think we have settled in life, sab first class ho gaya, to twing karke gaata hai, you know? And then we get shocked and we wake up. My God, material world is still miserable. And then that pain takes us some time to get relieved. And then we are settled down and we are okay now, everything is fine. And just when we are settled down, again one more comes. So Durga Devi's role is to constantly keep us uneasy in this world. The reason she does that is because, now some people ask, come on, itna satane ki kya zarurat hai? The reason she does that is because she doesn't want us to remain over here. She doesn't want us to settle down over here. Permanent house nahi banana idhar. We shouldn't make permanent houses in a temporary place. You know, does anybody construct houses on a ocean, waves of an ocean? Nahi. You can't make houses on the waves of the ocean because it changes every time, right? So, in a constantly changing place, we cannot have permanent settlement. So, Durga Devi's role in this material world is to make sure that we are troubled enough, we experience enough pain, and we experience enough punishment to make us ask one question. Just this one question is the reason for which this whole world is made, whole material world is made. You know what is the question? The question is, what did I do to go through so much trouble? Maine kya kya? Itna sata kyun rahe ho mujhe? Just that. Ye ek sawal puchne ke liye na, pura jeevan lag jata hai kabhi kabhi. और कभी कभी बहुत सारे जीवन लग जाते हैं समझने के लिए. सो द रोल ऑफ दुर्गा इज अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग रोल. वन टाइम वन ऑफ अवर लीडर्स यू आर शेयरिंग दिस एक्सपीरियंस विद अस. इट्स अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग एक्सपीरियंस टू सी फ्रॉम दिस पर्सपेक्टिव. सो ही यूज्ड टू गिव न्यूज पेपर्स इन डिफरेंट हाउसेस, यू नो, एंड व्हेन यू गिव न्यूज पेपर डिफरेंट हाउसेस, देयर वाज वन पर्टिकुलर हाउस ही वाज वेरी स्केर्ड ऑफ एंटरिंग बिकॉज देयर वाज अ फेरोशियस डॉग ओवर देयर. And this dog was almost like a tiger, extremely ferocious, huge. So, unfortunately, one particular day, he had to enter that house. And he was just hoping the dog doesn't come out. And just when he was hoping, the dog jumped. And the dog started barking so loudly, practically jumped on him. It was going to bite him. That time the owner came and he just called the dog back. Tommy, come back. And the dog just became like a cat and ran back, you know. So, he was thinking, why did this dog change its behavior in 1 second? You know, 1 second back, behaving like a tiger, attacking a person. And after 1 second, completely change. It's become like a cat practically. The reason is because the owner called the dog back. And the dog understood that this fellow, he has not come to harm the owner, but he has come to serve the owner. He has come to help the owner. And because he has come to help the owner and serve the owner, this person doesn't need to be treated badly. He has to be allowed and he has to be assisted. So Durga Devi does two roles in our life. For anyone who doesn't understand what is the purpose of the material world, who doesn't understand or doesn't focus on, so when somebody tries to enjoy in this world, when somebody feels that this world is a permanent world, when somebody feels that this is a world where I'm supposed to experience all the joys of life, when one tries to squeeze pleasure from this world, that time Durga does the role of a ferocious personality. And she makes sure that over here, you will not get your the kind of enjoyment that you're looking for. Enjoyment will come, but at a lot of cost. That one drop of honey will come in your mouth, but in an extremely compromised situation, you'll get that one drop of honey. So Durga Devi makes sure that this happens. But if the same person just changes his consciousness a little bit and thinks that I don't want to enjoy myself in this world, but I want to serve God. Just that little change of mindset, Durga Devi completely changes her role. So the same Durga, she appears now as Radha. The same Durga who appears before as Mahamaya, who makes sure that we are in this world through all the illusions that she creates, the same Durga transforms and appears as Radha. So the role of Radharani is to assist us to go to the spiritual world. The role of Radharani is to guide us towards the spiritual world. And the role of Radharani is to help us get the grace of Krishna. So the same personality does exactly two roles. If you see the back side of, you know, the same person, that is Durga, ferocious. And then you see the front side of the same person, that is Radha, very kind and compassionate. So why does Durga Devi do these two roles? The reason she does is that she doesn't want the wrong person to enter into the spiritual world, and she doesn't want a person who is not qualified to enter into the spiritual world. So she holds back all those people who are not qualified to go there, and she releases all those people who are qualified to go there. So essentially, as I said, the only reason this world is created like a jail, and the only reason that Durga is constantly harassing us through the Trishul, the threefold miseries of life, is for to make us ask this one question: what did I do to come to this prison? Where did I come from? Why did I come over here? And why am I suffering? So the Vedanta Sutra begins with an aphorism. You know what this aphorism is? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That is the aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra. What does it mean? It means, now that you have got a human form of life, ask questions. Why am I suffering? What is the purpose of my life? Where have I come from? So the moment we start asking these questions, That is the moment from which human life has begun. Till the time we don't ask these questions, why am I suffering? What is the purpose of my coming here? Where have I come here from? Till we don't ask these questions, we have actually not even started human life at all. So we are all in the pursuit of pains and pleasures, which even the animals get. So the day we start asking these questions, that day certain doors start opening up. And the whole way in which the pain and pleasure of this world is made is to make us experience misery. So where have we come from? We have come from the spiritual world. The spiritual world is a place of pleasure. The spiritual world is a place of joy. The spiritual world is a place of eternity. So matter and antimatter are exactly opposites. For everything that in everything in this world, there are opposites. For joy, there is sorrow as an opposite. For happiness, there is misery as an opposite. For gain, there is loss as an opposite. For everything in this world, there is an opposite. Similarly, there are three opposites. For eternal life, which is sat, the opposite is death. So now, the moment there is death, you should understand there is also deathlessness. In this world, as I said, there are always opposites existing. When we say there is death, which is end of life, there is also the possibility of eternity, which is absence of death. The moment we say there is ignorance in this world, unconscious in this world, there is opposite, which is conscious. That conscious aspect, you know, in today's world, if you look at the way people are, they're absolutely unconscious of anything. If I, you know, stand up and kick this chair, will the chair retaliate? The chair will not retaliate. Why? Because it is unconscious. But just like there is something that is unconscious, there is also something that is conscious. That is chitta. Sat means eternal, chitta means consciousness. And there is misery in this world, similarly there is happiness. That is ananda. So satchit ananda is the situation of the spiritual world. But the situation of the material world is, there is asat, and there is the absence of chitta, and there is nirananda, the absence of ananda. So the question now is that, what did we do to come here? That is the most important question now, you know. If we just know this, then a lot of other problems can get solved. Then we can also find out a way how to go back, right? So to understand this, let me tell you a story. This story appears in the Bible. This is the story of the prodigal son. One time, there was a very rich man. And this rich man, he had two sons. One son was very, very sober, very, very cooperative, and very obedient child. But he had another son who was absolutely, focusing on enjoying his life. And he had a lot of friends who were completely misleading him. And one time, the son who was completely misled by his friends, he came to the father. And he told the father, "I want a share of my property. Give me half the property and I'll go." The father said, "Come on, everything belongs to you. Where do you want to go? Just stay, take whatever you want." The son said, "No, I want my property and I want to go away from you." The father, he tried his best to explain to the son, but the son was just not agreeing. So the father divided the property, gave half the property to his son, and his boy went away. And his friends, they were all over him because he had a lot. Therefore, he said, success is relative. The more successful you are, the more relatives you have. So when you are apparently successful and you have a lot, there are a lot of people who will be hovering around you. And they'll tell you how to spend money. So this boy, he was surrounded by all his friends, and they completely squandered everything that he had. So all that he had was lost in a matter of a couple of months. So practically, he became a beggar. And as soon as everything he had was gone, his friends deserted him and left. This man, he She was miserable now. She was thinking, what will I do now? I can't go back to my father because I just, you know, took the share of my property and I came, walked out like that. So he said, let me find a job. Then he started looking out for a job to just, you know, feed himself. He found a job in a poultry farmer's, you know, place. And the poultry farmer, he told him, your job is to take care of the pigs. So he asked him, where will I stay? He said, stay with the pigs. You know, wherever little space is there, you sleep over there. So this boy started staying with the pigs, taking care of the pigs. And he asked that, you know, farmer, what do I eat? He said, eat whatever the pigs are eating. Whatever remains is yours. This man, as he was eating that food, he was just thinking, from where have I reached where? Disconnected from my father, thinking that I'll enjoy. And what is happening over here? I'm suffering like a fool. And he was thinking that the servant in my father's house is in a better situation than me at this point of time. And that's when he decided, I'll go back to my father, but I will not ask for anything. I will go back and tell him to accept me as a servant. That's it. Let him feed me 2 or 3 times a day. That's it. I don't want money. I don't want anything. I only want to become a servant in his house because at least I'll get fed well. This man came back to his village with that thought. When the father came to know that this the lost son is coming back, the father, he started running from his house towards the outskirts of the village. And he met the boy in the outskirts. And this boy, he was ashamed to face the father. And the father was, you know, really so happy seeing his son come back. He embraced him. And the son was telling, you know, don't touch me. I've come back only for one reason. I want to be a servant in your house. Please keep me as a servant. I've understood my mistake. So I can't claim property because I've taken already half my property. And everything else belongs to my brother now. So the father said, no. He said, for me, you will always remain my son. And for me, though you have made a mistake, because you have come back, understanding that you have made the mistake, I will not reject you. I will accept you as my son. And the father took him back into his house and treated him exactly like the other boy. No discrimination at all. This is exactly our story. Just like this prodigal son's, this boy, all of us were in the spiritual world with our father. But at some point of time, we developed a tendency, a thought, a desire to become independent of God. Thinking that God is enjoying in so many ways, why can't I enjoy like Him? So that is the first thought that separates us from the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, God is an enjoyer and everybody else assists in His enjoyment. And in the process of assisting God in His enjoyment, we also enjoy. It's not that we don't enjoy. But the moment the soul desires, develops this tendency that I want to enjoy separate from God, that is the time God says, not here. So He creates a separate place where we can go and try our best to enjoy. So we come here to the material world and really try our best to have, to become exactly like God. Have our own small setup where we can try, you know, being the masters, being the controllers, being the enjoyers, being the proprietors, you know, being the source, you know. So over a period of time, we keep trying to do all the things that exactly God does to enjoy. And then in the midst of all that frustration and enjoyment, here Durga Devi is there constantly poking us, you know, telling us, hey, this is not the place and this is not how you can try to enjoy, you know. Durga Devi is actually doing the role of an assistant, helping us in our understanding of what is real joy and happiness. And here we are in this world, just like this driver. There was one driver who was working for a man. And this driver, he somehow was a little funny man. So the owner came and sat in the car and told the driver, you know, take me to Cuff Parade. The driver said, aad moonni Cuff Parade jane ka. Kolaba leke jata hoon aapko. Ani aapko Ghatkopar leke jata hoon. This would be, the owner says, come on, I want to go to Cuff Parade. He said, nahi. Then the owner says, you know, at least turn on the AC. He said, no, garmi lag raha hai mujhe. Aap chahe to window khol lo. And then this driver is putting jarring rock and roll music and it's like really deafening. The owner says, "Band karo isko." Mujhe yehi sunna hai aaj. Maza aa raha hai. And then, you know, this fellow keeps driving and he reaches a certain place and he finally destination comes, he gets down and the owner takes the key away. Abhi chale jao. You go and find some other person and you drive some other car. You can't drive anymore my car. So just like this driver who developed a little independent tendency, so the driver can enjoy the AC, no problem. The driver can enjoy the drive, no problem. The driver can enjoy the music, no problem. The driver can enjoy all the facilities as long as he is dependent on the owner. As long as he assists the owner. The moment he develops a tendency to be independent, that time he is gone. He loses his role. There was a small boy, he went to his father. And you know, they were sitting near a fireplace. So this boy asked the father, if I touch the fire, what happens? The father said, no, don't touch, it will burn you. The boy said, nahi, mujhe nahi jalega, mere ko malum hai. The father said, no, don't touch, jalega. The son said, no, nahi jalega. The father said, okay, touch. This fellow goes and puts his hand, and immediately he gets a burn. And then from that day he decides, no more touching fire. Live experience. A small girl comes to her mother once and she tells her that today I want to do cooking. This girl is not even able to reach, you know, the height of the, you know, the place where they cook. Mother says, no, you can't cook. The girl says, no, I want to cook today. I want to cook. The mother said, okay, if you want to cook, I'll bring you a new kitchen set. So she brings her a plastic kitchen set. Exactly same toys, you know, plastic knife, plastic vegetables, plastic rice, plastic, you know, stove, plastic gas, everything plastic. And she gives her. And for 3 hours, she's cooking constantly, you know. After 3 hours of cooking, she comes to mother and tells her, please feed me. The mother says, come on, 3 hours you're cooking over here, you know. You eat what you cooked. The girl says, no, I want real food. So just like this girl, we went to God one point of time and said that we want to enjoy like you. आपके जैसा ही हमको करना है. The Lord says, come on, you can enjoy. I'm cooking. I'm doing so much for you. Why do you need to, you know, do separate endeavor? No, he said, no, I want my own. The Lord says, okay, if you want your own, not here, not in this kitchen, not in the spiritual world, I'll create a separate place for you. And then he creates the material world and sends us over here. And in the material world, what are we doing? Exactly like the small girl, we are trying to create our own setup of enjoyment. Our own family, our own bank balance, our own, you know, car, our own facilities, everything our own. And thinking that after a few hours of, you know, creating this facility for ourselves, we will enjoy. And then, after all that endeavor, kuch maja hi nahi aa raha hai. Kuch toh gadbad hai. Something is missing. That is the time when you turn back to God and says, my dear God, please give me real food. Give me real happiness. You know, what we are experiencing here is a shadow, is a fraction of what the real thing is. And that is when we realize that we are missing the real connection. Therefore, what was our crime? Just like this prodigal son, he got disconnected from his father, thinking that he will enjoy himself in a different way. And after all that attempt of enjoyment, when he gets frustrated, that's when he realizes, I need to turn back to my original father. And the whole purpose of the crime for which we are here in the material world is called as independence from God. When we developed our envy towards God, that is when we are sent to the material world. So what is the first thing that is done to a prisoner? As soon as the prisoner enters the prison house, the first thing that is done to a prisoner is that change of cloth. So in the material world, there are 84 lakh species of life. These are 84 lakh dresses. The scriptures say that there are Jalaja Navalakshani, there are 9 lakh types of aquatics. There are 20 lakh types of trees, Sthavara. There are 11 lakh types of reptiles, Krimi. There are 10 lakh types of birds, Pakshi. There are 30 lakh types of animals, Pashu. And there are 4 lakh types of human beings, which comes to about 84 lakh species. So Charles Darwin, his whole effort of trying to go and calculate around the world, if he had just studied this verse, so much effort would have been saved, you know, and he would have got accuracy also. Can you imagine what kind of accuracy? 9 lakh species of trees. Aapko count karne ki zarurat nahi hai, likha hua hai, already mehnat kiya hua hai.
तो आपस क्यों मेहनत कर रहे हो? व्हाट इज द मीनिंग ऑफ रिसर्च? रिसर्च मीन्स सर्चिंग फॉर व्हाट इज ऑलरेडी देयर. व्हाई डू यू नीड टू सर्च अगेन? यू नो, रिसर्च करने की क्या जरूरत है? ह्यूमन एनर्जी विच इज सपोज टू, इंस्टेड ऑफ यूजिंग इन रिसर्च, वेयर सपोज स्टडी व्हाट इज ऑलरेडी देयर. दैट इज व्हाट द शास्त्रज आर, दैट इज व्हाट वेदा इज. सो एसेंशियली दिस 84 लाख स्पीशीज आर लाइक 84 वराइटीज ऑफ ड्रेस, 84 लाख वराइटीज ऑफ ड्रेसेस. एवरी ड्रेस फॉर वन डिजायर ऑफ योर्स. मतलब हाउ मेनी डिजायर्स वी कैन हैव, हाउ मेनी वराइटीज ऑफ डिजायर्स यू कैन हैव टू एंजॉय? 84 लाख वराइटीज. दैट मीन्स यू कैन नॉट हैव 84 लाख वन वराइटी ऑल्सो. यू, देयर इज नो मोर, यू नो, दिस इज द फुल गैमेट ऑफ द डिजायर्स टू ट्राई टू एंजॉय. So according to what desire you have in your previous life, that body you get in the next life, that kind of species you are assigned to, and that kind of a dress you get. It's very interesting over here if you study from, you know, this perspective. Okay, 9 lakh species of aquatics is fine, understood, you know, we have seen variety. 20 lakh species of, you know, trees is fine, we have seen the variety. But what is the meaning of 4 lakh types of human beings? It's very, you know, weird to say 4 lakh types of human beings are there. What is the meaning of that? To help us understand that, we need to understand a background about why, how this division is done. Essentially, this division is done according to the development of the consciousness of the living entity, the development of the consciousness of the Atma. The more conscious, the more highly conscious you are, you get a higher type of body, you get a higher type of dress. And the lower your consciousness is, you get a lower type of dress. And the consciousness is directly proportional to the development of the central nervous system. And all of us have a central nervous system in our body, you know. So human beings have the most highly evolved central nervous system, and the plants, trees and all have the least evolved central nervous system. So the theory of evolution is not wrong, but the theory of evolution is not from the perspective of, you know, one species, you know, transforming into another species. But it is in terms of consciousness. As you grow in your consciousness, that is what evolution is. What Charles Darwin is actually trying to refer to should be evolution in consciousness and not evolution in the body. Because the bodies are all prototypes. The bodies are all molds which are eternally existing. This whole question of which came first, hen or egg, there is no need to answer this question because both were there existing forever. Because both are creations, both are their bodies essentially, you know, their dresses to the, for the Atma to fit in, right? So if there is a impractical way of seeing from a chemical evolution theory point of view, it doesn't make any sense only. Because chemical evolution theory, it says that everything evolved from chemicals. So for DNA structures to be formed, which are the basic building blocks of life, there has to be proteins. But for proteins to be formed, there has to be DNA. Without the existence of DNA, proteins can't be formed. And without the existence of proteins, DNA can be formed. Which came first? Both came first from the point of view of Brahma's creation, from the point of view of the Lord's creation. So essentially, all these species always existed and always continue to exist. No species can become extinct. Whatever is extinct in this world doesn't mean it is extinct anywhere in the universe. It will be there somewhere else also, right? So anyways, the point I was trying was, why are there 4 lakh species of human beings? That means there are 4 lakh varieties of consciousness in human beings. There are some human beings who are almost like animals. Their consciousness is very, very low. And there are some human beings who are very highly evolved in their consciousness. Highest being Lord Brahma. So Brahma is also a living entity, a jiva. All the demigods fit into the category of living entities, jivas. So they are all among the higher of the 4 lakh species. And among the lower of the 4 lakh species are the ones that are, you know, almost consciousness having of those of animals. And we are somewhere in between. Hum Brahma jaise bhi nahi hai evolved. Hum janwar jaise bhi nahi hai, pashu jaise bhi nahi hai. Kidhar to beech mein atak gaye. So now the whole purpose of human life is to evolve, to grow in your consciousness from the lower level of consciousness to a higher level of consciousness. So human life is like a, so basically to understand this whole system, you know, I give an example often. It is like moving on a highway. Just like on highway, you know, there are some express highways which are really long, especially in the Western countries, you know, 10 kilometers, 20 kilometers, absolutely no U-turn. Just keep going straight. And you can go at 160 kilometers, 180 kilometers, you can go at whatever speed you want. So, animal species is like that highway. So, the animal species automatically evolve in their consciousness. So, animal species which is in the form of a tree, it naturally evolves into a, you know, higher one, into reptiles. It naturally evolves into, you know, so basically, among the 20 lakh also, it has to go through all the 20 lakh varieties, one by one, one by one, one by one. And then finally you come to the next species. Then again you have to go through, you know, 11 lakh varieties of reptiles. Then you come to the next one, you know. So, animal life is like moving on a highway at full speed. There is no choice. It's not that, you know, if a person is having, if the Atma is having a body of a tree, it can't, you know, the Atma of the in the body of a tree can't say, I want to directly jump to human species. Not possible. You have to go through the process of evolution. You have to go through that cycle, you know. But the moment you reach human life is like a junction. There is a time to take a U-turn or go ahead. So, human life, depending on what actions you do, what choices you make, and how you use your ability, it is decided. Have you used your human body like a tractor, or have you used it like a Mercedes car? If you used it like a tractor, like an animal, then you take a U-turn and go back to the animal species. You go back to exactly the species that you have used your body like. If you have used your body like a pig, you get into the species of a pig. That is your consciousness. If you have used your body like an elephant, you go into the species of elephant, because that is your consciousness. So essentially, according to the consciousness in which the human being is evolved, that is the kind of body he gets next. If a human being decides, I don't want to take the U-turn, but I want to go further, that choice also is there in a human being. He can go further, he can become a demigod, or he can go back to the spiritual world. He can perfect his life. That choice is not there in animal. Therefore, animals don't have sin. Animals don't have a concept of sin. Why? Choice hi nahi hai, toh sin kaise aayega? The tiger has no choice. The cow has no choice. The dog has no choice. When there is no choice, there is no sin. But humans have a choice. And because humans have a choice, there is a concept of sin and there is a concept of good. So, the 4 lakh species of humans is a 4 lakh levels of consciousness. So here, as soon as you come into the prison house, there is a jailer waiting for you to make sure that you don't get out. The jailer is making sure that there is pain and punishment. But along with that, the jailer gives you a new dress. Lo, pehen lo. Aap bolenge nahi chahiye, pehenna hi padega. Kuch option nahi hai. Pehenna hi padega dress ko. So only time the dress goes away is when you go back to the spiritual world. So from one species of life to next species of life, when you transform, when you transmigrate, the Atma goes, and along with the Atma, the subtle body also grows. The mind, intelligence, the false ego also goes to the next body. And this subtle body keeps traveling with the Atma till the Atma is eligible to go back to the spiritual world. So only when the Atma is eligible to go back to the spiritual world, leaving the material world behind, that time the subtle body is left behind and the Atma goes on its own. The subtle body is one of the coverings, is the false ego. That false ego is the thing that keeps you in the material world constantly. The false ego convinces you, "Aur try maro, Bhagwan jaise aap enjoy kar payenge." The false ego constantly is convincing you, it's pumping you up to tell you, think, make you think that you can actually enjoy like God. And the moment you disconnect from the false ego by actually taking shelter of a higher process, that is the time when you can, when you're eligible to go back to the spiritual world. So as long as you exhibit ahankar, what is the meaning of ahankar? Ahankar essentially means that I am the doer. Car means, you know, vehicle. Ahankar means I am the driver of the vehicle. That's what ahankar essentially means, you know. That means I am driving my own life. I am responsible for my own life, you know. So the moment you have this ahankar, the concept that I am the doer, that moment you are bound to the material world. So The prisoner is bound by shackles in the material world. What are the shackles that bind the prisoner? There are three shackles, which are the three modes of material nature which bind a prisoner. But unfortunately, these shackles are nice looking shackles. There are three shackles: the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. These three shackles, they are constantly binding us in the material world. The mode of goodness is a golden color shackle, is a golden shackle. The mode of passion is a silver shackle, and the mode of ignorance is a iron shackle. So when you're bound by these shackles, and you wear a golden shackle and you say, achala kara hai, golden shackle, you know, it's a shackle, Baba. Though it is gold, it is still a shackle. The silver shackle is still a shackle. So essentially, the three modes of material nature bind us and keep us in the material world. What is the three modes of material nature essentially? The mode of goodness or sattva guna, it gives you a sense of purity. It gives you the ability to grasp more knowledge, and it allows you to have freedom from sin. Though sattva guna is a very high mode, it is still binding. You know why? The reason sattva guna is binding is because though a person is in the mode of goodness, for him to enjoy the result of the mode of goodness, he has to take another birth again. Sattva guna essentially means you only do good activities. You only do pure activities. You keep doing good activities in this world, welfare work, you know, helping others, living a very clean life. You do all the good activities, but the result of good activities is that you get the benefit of either going to the heavenly planets, or you get the benefit of coming back into this world in a human form again. So continue from there. Essentially, what it means, the cycle of birth, death, old age, disease is going to continue. Golden cage, golden shackle, but it is still a shackle. The mode of passion is known as Rajagun. The mode of passion means unlimited desires and obsessed with lust, with the desire to enjoy in this world. And the mode of ignorance, Tamagun, essentially means strongly controlled by intoxication, laziness and sleep, and delusion. So here, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, and the mode of ignorance, all the three bind us in this world. And no one in this world is made up of only one mode. In fact, in one family, you can have people in three different modes. We find in the Ramayana, Ravan in the mode of passion, unlimited desires and unlimited lust. A Vibhishan in the mode of goodness, purity, knowledge, you know, freedom from sin. And Kumbhakarna, mode of ignorance, intoxication, laziness, delusion, right? So in one family, you can have three people in three different modes. So the three modes are like khichdi. So you don't get one mode only. Yeah, me pure sattva guna hai. Aisa nahi bol sakte. Subha ke samay sattva guna dikhta hai. Dopahar ke samay stock exchange upar badhta hai to rajagun dikhta hai, you know. Aur raat ke samay daru peeke, you know, tamagun dikhta hai. So in one day, all three affect you. And at the same time, all three affect you also. You are always in a mixture of the three modes. Mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. All the three are there in all of us in mixed proportions. And the kind of lifestyle that we live, according to that, the three modes are determined. The kind of food that you eat, the kind of music that you hear, food extremely spicy, you know, hot when it goes in and hot when it comes out. Mode of passion, Rajagun food, you know. Sattvagun food is, you know, wholesome, juicy, nutritious. Rajagun food is junk food, quick to make and hard to digest, you know. So stale food, every time put in microwave, you know, heat it up and eat. This is all mode of ignorance food. So the kind of food that you eat influences which mode you are in. The kind of music that you hear influences which mode you are in. The time of the day, it also works according to the three modes of material nature. So essentially, the three modes of material nature, they bind you. Because of desires. To experience the three modes of material nature, you have to be in this world only. And all the three modes of material nature, they don't allow you to get out from this world. The Rajagun, Tamagun definitely binds you. You can very clearly see it. Rajagun 100% binds you. That also you can very clearly see. But Sattvagun binds you, that you can't see very clearly. That is a very subtle one. That is actually a trick of Maya, the trick of Durga Devi. So though, you know, there are some people who are so sattvic, hum kuch galat kari nahi rahe, hum galat kari nahi sakte. They are so sattvic that they don't want to think of higher purpose of life at all. Unko idhar hi rehna hai. So they'll keep getting birth in higher, you know, in aristocratic houses, in Brahminical families, in houses that are, you know, doing sophisticated things. But at the same time, they don't want to get out from this world. They want to remain in the cycle because it's so sweet. Itna achha lag raha hai, maja aa raha hai, you know. Passion, you get hurt sometimes. Ignorance, you definitely get hurt sometimes, you know. But goodness, you feel nothing is wrong. I'm perfect, you know. Many pious Indian families fall in this problem. The golden shackle. That is a problem with many pious Indian families. They feel that sab kuch first class hai. Bhagawan ne humko aisa jagah diya hai. Humko chhodna hi nahi hai jagah ko. Wohi to problem hai. Chhodna nahi hai. Wohi to samasya hai. So when you realize it is a shackle, the golden chain is also a shackle. Only when you realize that, you'll think of coming out. Because knowledge, purity and freedom from sin, it gives you a sense of happiness. And it also gives you a sense of control. I have control over my life. I have control over my desires. I have control over my feelings. You know, that is also dangerous for the Atma from an eternal perspective. So, having said all that, this is the reason why we are coming to the material world. The reason we come to the material world is because we have the original crime that we did is trying to become independent of God, trying to enjoy independent from God. God creates a material world which is like a prison house, and in this material world Durga Devi is a jailer who makes sure that we are in the prison house even though there is no apparent jail, but she makes sure that we are stuck here. And the way Durga Devi does it is by giving us a dress. You know, as soon as we wear the dress, everybody knows bhautik jagat ka hai, material world ka hai. Just like you look at a prisoner wearing that particular uniform, you understand he's a prisoner. So anybody from any planet, he looks at us wearing this dress. Idhar ka hai, material world ka hai, you know. So spiritual world, they don't have this kind of a dress. You know, they have a spiritual dress. So Durga Devi gives us a dress that puts us in that species. In addition to that, she binds us with the three modes of material nature. In the combination of these three, we are stuck in the material world. So now, we will go to the next understanding, which is Kala, which is the time factor. So Kala is supposed to be an executioner. Time is one thing that is equal to all. Everyone has to go through the execution that time gives. Nobody is an exception and nobody can stop time. There are two types of cycles. There is something known as a universal time cycle, and then there is something known as an individual time cycle. So this universal time cycle is a very interesting type of cycle because this is the fascinating understanding from the Vedic perspective. This understanding you will never find anywhere in the world. And this is an understanding that gives you clarity of life. So, the Vedic culture says that everything is cyclic. Nothing happens in linear fashion. So, things keep happening again and again. The sun and the moon move in cyclic order. The earth rotates in a cyclic order. So, the incarnations of the Lord come in a cyclic order. Similarly, the yugas move in a cyclic order. So, Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. This is a cycle in which the Yugas move. So, after every Kali Yuga, again a Satyuga starts. And after every Satyuga, Treta Yuga starts. Like that, the cycle continues. So, the interesting part in the cycle is that these Yugas have certain durations. And each Yuga is very clearly growing, progressive in type. Kali Yuga is 4,32,000 years. That's the span of Kali Yuga. So right now we are in Kali Yuga, by the way, and only 5,000 years of Kali Yuga have passed. So if anybody tells you 12th December 2020, 14, something is going to happen, you say sorry, not this year, you know. Something small will happen, but definitely not a dissolution will happen, because that dissolution is still 4,27,000 years ahead. So Kali Yuga deteriorates as time passes. The consciousness of people in this age deteriorates. And you will find the consciousness of people 10 years before and 10 years later will be much different. So the consciousness deteriorates in Kali Yuga. So before Kali Yuga is Dwapar Yuga. Dwapar Yuga is 2 times Kali Yuga, that is 8,64,000 years. Treta Yuga is 3 times Kali Yuga, 12,96,000 years. And Satya Yuga is 4 times Kali Yuga, 17,28,000 years. So these 4 Yugas combined together, they form what is known as one Chatur Yuga. One Chatur Yuga essentially becomes 43,20,000 years. And Chatur Yuga means all the 4 Yugas put together, you know, Satya, Dwapar, Kali and Treta, all put together is one Chatur Yuga. So if you multiply one Chatur Yuga into 1,000, that is the duration of 12 hours of Lord Brahma's day, of Brahma's life, you know, 12 hours. 12 hours of Brahma is 1,000 into 43,20,000 years from our perspective. Brahmaji has 24 hours in a day, that is 12 into 2. So that means you multiply 1,000 into 2 into 43,20,000 years, that is one day of Brahma. Brahma lives such 365 days in a year. So multiply that into 365. And Brahma lives such 100 years. Multiply that into 100. So what is the duration of Brahma's life? 100 into 365 into 2 into 1,000 into 43,20,000 years. That comes to about 311,020,000,000,000 years. So Brahmaji, you know, so from our perspective, Brahmaji lives eternally. He never dies, you know. But that's not how it is. That is only 100 years of Brahmaji. Now Einstein proposed a theory of relativity, you know. So he said time is relative in different places. This is exactly what he was talking about. So from the heavenly planets and the earth planet, time spans are different. So 6 months of the heavenly planet is one day in the earth. So you go to heaven and come back, a century would have passed, you know, in the earth planet. So that's how time cycle is. So for you know, for us, Brahmaji is living fascinating amount of time. But over there, time passes fast also. Abhi Brahmaji bane, abhi ho gaya, time khatam, dusre Brahmaji aa jate hai, you know. So over there, time passes fast. So people in the heavenly planets, they have fascinatingly long lives as far as we are concerned. But from their perspective, you know, time is passing fast. So like, you know, when you are sitting in front of a television or you're watching a movie, time passes very fast. But when you're sitting in a lecture, time passes very slow. Theory of relativity. So essentially, from the perspective of what you're doing, time passes, you know. So Brahmaji lives such fascinating long time, but his life is not without problems. I'll tell you what are the problems in Brahmaji's life. Just to make you understand that, you know, you're not the only ones who are going through problems. Brahmaji lives, I said, such a long duration of life, but he has 12 hours of the day and 12 hours in the night. So when Brahmaji is awake, you know, 12 hours a day, that time he has to do his creation, the whole job of creating this universe, making the 14 planetary system, the heaven, hell, so many details. Sometime in future, you know, depending on how many of you are last after 6 days, I'm planning to discuss a chart. This is a chart of the material and spiritual world in great details, very, very big details. That will take about 2 hours, 1 or 2 hours time. So sometimes in future I'll do that. That will give you a clarity. But right now, this is like a trailer, you know. So Brahmaji, he has 12 hours in the morning, I said. So in the day, he starts creating. He gets the knowledge. This is a very detailed, great detail about how he gets the knowledge. But essentially he creates during the day. So in the night when he goes to sleep, the 12 hours that he goes to sleep, everything that he creates gets destroyed. There's annihilation, complete annihilation, you know, during the time that he sleeps. So the next day morning when he gets up, there's nothing. He has to create again. Can you imagine? Itna banane ke baad, so gaya to sab doob gaya. Everything gets annihilated, you know, and he has to recreate next day morning. God makes sure that everybody is busy. Everybody is engaged, you know, with enough work. So, but that's not the only problem. The other problem is that Brahmaji during the day, when he is awake, Sometimes, you know, he takes jhapkis, you know, he kind of dozes off. And every time Brahmaji dozes off, there is partial annihilation. Can you imagine what a role this is? He can't even wink his eyes for a second. Because the moment he winks his eyes, there's annihilation going on here. So that is the kind of responsibility that that role has for those who want to become Brahmas. You know, this is a statutory warning. You know? Conditions apply to do that role. It seems fascinating. Char mundi hai aur, you know, kafi kuch exciting lag raha hai. But itna exciting bhi nahi hai. It's not so exciting. It's a tough job practically. And it's a really, you know, complicated one. Anyways, coming back from Brahma to our life. So this the universe, it continues in cycles. So as I said, Satya, Treta, Dwapar, Kali, it continues in cycles. And the reason it continues in cycle is because there is a concept of eternity. Nothing in this world disappears. As I said, law of conservation of energy and matter. Matter and energy don't get created, nor do they get destroyed. The Atma neither created, you know, sorry, the Atma, once it gets created, it doesn't get destroyed. It goes in an eternal cycle from one species to another, you know. So there is no concept of annihilation in this world. It's all cyclic. The present trend of understanding is linear. Our calendar is all linear. There's a problem with linear calendars. The problem with linear calendars is that it is not right. So therefore, we have to keep making adjustments to make sure that the calendar works properly, you know. Because we function in a linear time cycle. That's what we understand. But the universe functions in a cyclic time cycle. Therefore, in the olden times, people watch the sun and the moon to find out time, right? They didn't need a watch. But we need a watch because we are constantly feeling that life works in a linear way. And the problem with the linear type of understanding is that it goes through a lot of cheating process. December is supposed to be 10th month, but it is the 12th month. November is supposed to be the 9th month, it is the 11th month. October is supposed to be the 8th month, it is the 10th month. The reason is because there were two people who created the problem. Julius and Augustine. These both wanted their name to be in the months. So therefore July and August was inserted Jabardasti. And both of them wanted 31 days in their month. Therefore out of all exceptions, just completely out of the box, these 2 months were put in. And we are till now suffering because of these two false egos, you know, in the past. So the whole calendar is absolutely wrong because it's a messed up calendar. It's an egoistic calendar. But the cycle of the universe is cyclic. So life also goes through a cycle. There is the process of conception. There is a process of birth. Then there is childhood. There is a young age. There is youth. There is middle phase. There is old age, and finally there is death. And the moment there is death, there is again another birth. So the whole thing is very cyclic. So time is explained to be a great gambler. The reason time is explained to be a great gambler is because just like we gamble with money, we gamble with time also. In fact, people gamble with time the most. Human life is limited. How much time we have in human life, we don't know. Nobody can ever predict that you walk out of this room that we will stay alive. Impossible. Human life is absolutely unpredictable. And can you imagine how much gambling we are doing with human life? You know, somebody was, one time I was distributing books in Churchgate. I gave the book to one boy, 21, 22 year old boy. The boy, kya hai? I said, Bhagavad Gita. This boy said, no. When I become 60, I'll buy. I said, what is the guarantee you'll become 60? So that boy got a shock, you know, because he never expected me to ask such a question. So I said, what is the guarantee you'll become 60? The boy said, no, I know I'll become 60. I said, I can show you hundreds of, you know, people who have never become 60 in their life. And then finally the boy bought the Bhagavad Gita. But essentially the point I'm trying to tell is that we don't know what is the time frame we have in our life. And because we don't know what is the time frame we have in our life, it is so unpredictable. Therefore, we have to be very careful of how we spend every second of this time. If every second of this time can be spent in two ways. One way is that it can be spent to get ourselves bound more in this world. And another way is that we can spend this time to get ourselves unbound from this world. So depending on how we spend our time, we use our time in a right or wrong way. Now, finally, we'll come to this last section, which is a section of karma. So, we just now we discussed the section of prakriti, which is material nature. We discussed in elaborate details why we are here in the material world, what is the material world, you know, why we go through sufferings in the material world and all that. And we discussed about kala, time factor, how time is very cyclic, and the time is one thing that is binding us to this material world in terms of duration. So the connection between time and prakriti, the time and material nature, is that prakriti is making us constantly go through sufferings and time is constantly ticking away. So basically, time factor is a factor where we need to make choices. When we know the importance of time factor, then we know the importance of making right choices. Then we know the importance of the value to making the right choice at the right time, right? And now, what is the reaction or what happens based on our choices is what the law of karma is. Once we make our choices, then laws work. So a fool only will say that there is no law that is governing me. I can do what I want. I'm absolutely not accountable. But an intelligent person sees laws working everywhere. And then he realizes that I am also bound by certain laws. So to understand this law of karma, let us just have a small introduction to the whole concept of law of karma. So each one of us in this world have very unique traits. And there are so many differences in this world. Some people are born very healthy. Some people are born handicapped. Some people are born very handsome. Some people are born ugly. Some people are born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And some people are born in an impoverished condition. The world we find is so many children, so many innocent people suffering because of no reason apparently. We find, you know, small children going through excruciating pain and suffering in their lives. It almost seems that God is cruel. And when we see these sufferings, we tend to ask ourselves this question: why is God acting so cruelly? And that brings us to the fourth understanding of life, which is deism. I started by talking about the concept of atheism. Atheism means God is neither the creator nor the controller. We spoke about the story of Charles Darwin. Then we spoke about the concept of theism, which means God is the creator and the controller. We spoke about the story of Arthur Ashe. Then we spoke about the concept of confusion, which means we don't know whether the God is creator or controller. We spoke about the theory of the Clark family in Titanic. And now we are speaking about this concept of deism. Deism means essentially God is the creator, but he is not the controller. This is what deism means. There was one man, his name was Harold Kushner. This man, he went through an experience in his life that made him write a book. And the name of the book that he wrote was When Bad Things Happen to Good People. That is where we got the title of this talk from. So the reason he wrote this book was because this man was a devout Christian, strong believer in God, ardent follower of religion. But at some point of time in his life, something happened that really shook him up. He had a son who was about 13 years old, and this boy contracted a disease known as progeria. And the result of this disease was that this boy, though he was 12, he was looking as he was 60. His organs started deteriorating, his body started wrinkling and becoming old. And when he was 13, his boy died. So when his son died, Harold Kushner, he was literally shocked. He didn't lose his faith in God, but then he came to a conclusion. His conclusion was very simple. His conclusion was, God, he cannot be all merciful and all powerful at the same time. He says, God, he may be all powerful, but though he may be all powerful, he is not all merciful. If he was merciful, then why would there be so much suffering around? And then he says, let's assume if God is all merciful, then he is not all powerful. Because if he is all powerful, then why do we find that he doesn't have the power to alleviate suffering? So his conclusion, this is what deism is that God created this world, but he lost control of this world. So his understanding is, God is definitely one of the two. Either he's all powerful or he's all merciful. He cannot be both. That means God has created this world for sure, but he has lost control over this world.
Now the world is gone for a hell. अभी कुछ भी होता रहता है, भगवान को मालूम ही नहीं क्या करना चाहिए, भाग गए वो. So many people feel that God has created such a place that it is completely messy now. इतना बड़ा creation बना दिया, अभी भगवान को मालूम नहीं कैसे संभालना है, तो छोड़ के भाग गए. अभी किधर और बना रहा है creation दूसरा, उधर भी mess करने के लिए. So the whole understanding is deism means that somewhere God has lost control. Krishna in the Gita he says, Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu. Krishna says, I am equal to all. I have no partiality and I have no sides. So essentially, why does Krishna say that? Let us try to understand this. In a court, sometimes we find a judge, when he passes a decree, when he passes an order, he orders for imprisonment, rigorous imprisonment to some people, and to some people he orders a huge amount of compensation and money. Now the question is the judge partial? You know, of course, in today's world, yes, it's possible judge is partial, you know. But I'm talking about, you know, traditional stalwart judges who are not partial, you know. So is the judge partial? No. He doesn't look at a, you know, person from and just decide whom to give what. What he does essentially is that he looks at the activities of the individuals, and based on the activities of the individuals, he gives judgments. He gives, you know, either punishment or compensation. Similarly, God is sitting as a Paramatma within our heart. As a Paramatma, he is impartial. It is not that in a pig's body, Paramatma doesn't exist. गंदा है, परमात्मा उधर जगह किधर बैठेंगे? नो, सम वर्म्स दैट स्टेन्स टूल सो इनसिग्निफिकेंट इज नॉट दैट इन देयर बॉडी परमात्मा डजंट एग्जिस्ट. परमात्मा एग्जिस्ट इन एवरी लिविंग एंटिटी, नो मैटर वेदर दे आर सिंफुल, नो मैटर दे आर पायस, नो मैटर दे आर डर्टी, नो मैटर दे आर प्योर, वॉट एवर कंडीशन ऑफ लाइफ इज देयर, द परमात्मा इज ऑलवेज देयर. दैट शोज दैट गॉड इज इम्पार्शियल. Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu, Krishna says. And how does God judge? How does God pass judgments? Whether this person should be punished or whether this person should be rewarded, it is based on this understanding, which is the definition of karma. Essentially, the definition of karma is activities performed by the soul in the material body, conditioned by the three modes of material nature, under the control and purview of time. That is known as karma. So God, he looks at this. What are the actions that we are performing in the material body, conditioned by the three modes of material nature and under the control of purview of time? What we do, depending on that, God gives a judgment. So just to kind of summarize, who am I? I am the soul. Where am I? I am in the material world. What situation am I in? I am in a material body. What am I bound by? The three modes of material nature. Who is controlling me? Time factor. And who is watching me? Paramatma. So essentially, this is what the law of karma essentially is. I am an Atma, but I am living in a material world where you will be constantly judged based on your actions. I am in a material body and I am influenced by the three modes of material nature. And time factor is controlling me and the Paramatma is watching me. So the law of karma and the judgment of the law of karma passes, God passes, is essentially what we know as the third law of Newton. Newton's third law is not invented by him, it's just discovered by him, you know. So every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That is what law of karma is. If I kick a door and the door is locked, then what will happen? I'll rebound, it's my fault. If I eat something spicy, next day morning something horrible will happen. If I plant a seed of a brinjal, I can't expect mangoes to grow. If I plant a seed of a brinjal, brinjal only will grow. So, as I sow, so shall I reap. That is essentially the law of karma. There was one man, his name was Pedreski Ignes. This man was a very famous pianist in Poland. And this man, he was very, very well recognized and influential. So a group of young boys, they came to him one day and they told him, they requested him to come and help them with a concert.
they were raising funds to support their education. They didn't have money to study. So this man, seeing their cause, he agreed. And the boys, he quoted the fee that he would charge. And he quoted a very nominal fee. So the boys organized a concert, but the concert was a flop. Absolute flop. And the result was that the boys didn't make much. So this man, so they came to this man and gave a check to him of not even 1/4 of what they're supposed to pay him. And they told him what happened. They didn't make up the money. I'm sorry. Things like that. So this man understood the cause. He was a very kind man. He told them, don't worry. I don't want this money also. He gave the money back. He said, use this money for your education and pay me back whenever you get, whenever you earn. So these boys went back and this man eventually continued and he became the president of Poland eventually. So at one point of time, Poland was going through a crisis. And the crisis was so intense. It was actually a drought situation, famine, practically no food available, no water resources, nothing. So that point of time, this man, he decided to ask for help. So he approached the then president of America, William Howard, and he asked him, for some help to support the suffering country. So as soon as he wrote a letter to this man, he never met this man ever in his life. First time he requested something, and huge amounts of resources started coming into their country. The problem was solved, the needs were taken care of. But after the whole thing got over, Ignace from Poland, he came to America and he asked this man, why did you do this for me? You didn't have to do anything at all because I don't even know you and we don't even owe you anything. Why did you do this? And this man told him, you remember those students who had come to you for help? I was one of them. So essentially in his previous days, he did something for somebody. And that helped him much later in his life. Therefore, this whole concept of free will and destiny, this whole concept of how we use our free will, and that decides what destination we take. So I'll just explain to you in a very brief way what is this whole concept of destiny. How really things that happen in our life happen. So many people feel that everything is controlled by God. हम कठपुतली है भगवान के जो जो चाहता है वो करता है हमसे सो मेनी पीपल फील लाइक दैट बट इफ दैट इज ट्रू देन वी आर रोबोट्स गॉड इज डूइंग एवरीथिंग एंड वी आर जस्ट लाइक ज़ॉम्बीज जस्ट मूविंग अराउंड व्हाट एवर गॉड डज ही मेक्स अस डू दैट्स नॉट द वे इट इज द लॉ ऑफ कर्मा एक्सप्लेन्स दिस होल कॉन्सेप्ट इन अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग वे सो एवरी एक्शन हैज अ रिस्पॉन्स दैट मीन्स एनीथिंग यू नो वी नीड टू समथिंग हैपन्स इन आवर लाइफ वी respond to that action. So, and every response that we do leads to a reaction. But the response that we do, the response we give, is based on what is known as free will. This is the first thing that we need to understand. God never interferes with our free will. If God interferes with our free will, that means God is controlling us. There is one thing which is the only property of this Atma. The only property of the Atma is free will. The Atma owns nothing else. Everything else is God's property. The only thing God hands over to the Atma is free will. Therefore, God doesn't interfere in our free will to stay in the material world or with our free will to come back to the spiritual world. Somebody might ask, if we are all sons, expansions of God, part and parcel of God, why does not God force us to come back to Him? He can easily force us. We are expansions of Him. He doesn't, because this is the reason. If He controls, just see the dilemma of being God. If He, controls us completely, we say, kya ye? Itna control karte hai. And if He doesn't control us at all, we say, kya ye? Kuch karte nahi hamare liye. Both ways we are blaming God only for everything that happens in us, right? So essentially, this is one thing God never interferes with, free will. But the free will to choose our response is influenced by the three modes of material nature. That means, depending on whether we are in a mode of passion, whether we are in a mode of ignorance, or whether we are in a mode of goodness, that influences our free will. So our choices are influenced by free will. Our choices are influenced by the three modes. And how does it we determine which mode we are in? As I said, based on our food habits, that also is choice. So that is also a choice that we make, and that is also a conscious decision that we do. So the free will helps us make a response, and once we make a response, then there is a reaction. For example, if we decide mujhe Delhi jana hai, so the action is that I go to the airport and I use my free will and I buy a ticket to Delhi, and then I use my free will and I go and sit in the airplane, and once I sit in the airplane, then destiny takes over. After I sit in the airplane, I say, "Arey, I have changed my decision. I want to go to Bangalore. Utaro, utaro mujhe." Aisa nahi hota hai. Airplane ud gaya to ho gaya. But over there, what you do? If you do something wrong over there, you are creating another action, another response, and again you are using your free will. That will lead to another destiny, another reaction. If you do some mess over there, you will come back or down, and then you will go to jail straight. So that's how the whole thing is. So it's not that everything is controlled by destiny. Destiny comes after you have used your free will. After you used your free will and made your choice, then everything is in the hands of destiny. But at every point of time in our life, we have the free will to make the choices. And that is what the law of karma is. That is the free will that we use to decide whether we are doing karma. So essentially, there are three types of karma. That means using our free will, we can do three types of actions. The first type of action is known as karma or pious activities. I do good to others, I get good back. If I do something nice happens to me. I told you the story of, you know, Ignes. So this is the first type of karma, which is known as good karma. So charitable work, welfare activities, all the nice things that we do in this world fall under good karma. The second type of karma is known as vikarma or sinful activities. If I do anything wrong in this world, then I get a reaction, which is a sinful reaction, which is known as vikarma. So the problem with vikarma and karma is that both of them keep you in this world. How? To suffer the sin, you have to take another birth, and to enjoy the good, you have to take another birth. अच्छा कर्म कर दिया तो आपको वापस जन्म लेना पड़ेगा उसका फल भुगतने के लिए. और यू गो टू हेवनली प्लैनेट्स, व्हिच इज आल्सो पार्ट ऑफ द मटेरियल वर्ल्ड ओनली, है ना. एंड हेवनली प्लैनेट आल्सो इज इनसिक्योर प्लेस, राइट. सो टू एंजॉय द गुड यू हैव टू टेक अ बर्थ, एंड टू सफर द बैड यू हैव टू टेक अ बर्थ. सो व्हाट इज द वे आउट? कुछ भी करो वापस आना ही पड़ेगा. देयर इज अ वे आउट, एंड दिस इज व्हाट वी हैव हर्ड 5 days. हम लोग इधर बैठ बैठ के किसके लिए सुन रहे हैं? इसके लिए. दिस इज नोन एज अकर्म. दिस इज अ थर्ड टाइप ऑफ कर्म. अकर्म मीन्स न्यूट्रल एक्टिविटीज. दैट मीन्स डूइंग दिस एक्टिविटीज यू गेट नो रिएक्शन. यू गेट नेदर गुड रिएक्शन नॉर बैड रिएक्शन. कुछ होता ही नहीं है. द पर्सन हु डज अकर्म, दैट पर्सन इज इन दिस वर्ल्ड बट नॉट ऑफ दिस वर्ल्ड. सो देयरफॉर व्हाट वी नीड टू रियली फोकस ऑन नाउ इज दिस वन, अकर्म. And for your kind information, tomorrow's whole session, the whole of 6th session is going to be only akarma. Practical application of akarma in daily life. That is the real, you know, topic. So we call practical application of Gita in daily life. But essentially in Gita, this concept of akarma is the contribution of Krishna to our life. The reason Krishna spoke the entire Gita to Arjun is to make Arjun understand this concept of akarma. And when we understand this concept of a karma, life becomes completely different. So that means, whatever you do, you don't get a reaction. That means, there is no question of rebirth again. There is no question of doing good and getting good. There is no question of doing bad and getting bad. What you are doing, you don't get any reaction to it. That's what we will discuss tomorrow. So, there are different types of karma, I said. And according to the type of karma, you get reactions. There is first type of karma known as instant karma. Instant karma means you do something, you immediately get a reaction. Just like you put a card in the ATM machine, you immediately get money. The second type of karma is known as delayed karma. That means you write a check, it'll take some time for the cash to come. An example of instant karma is you sow mustard seeds, within 3 months you get a crop. But if you sow a coconut tree, you get a crop after 8 years, 10 years. This is delayed karma. You know, if a boy fools around with a girl, immediately gets a slap. This is instant karma. But somebody may murder another person, he may not immediately get a reaction. He may get a reaction after a long period of time. But he does get a reaction. The laws of this world may forgive him or may not be able to find him. But the laws of nature never forget him or forgive him. And in fact, the laws of karma are so accurate. The laws of this world are completely inaccurate. If a person does one murder, what he gets? One death punishment. But if a person does 10 murders, what he gets? One death punishment. But the law of karma doesn't work like that. If you do 10 murders, you get 10 punishments in 10 consecutive lives. So the law of karma is a much more detailed one. So if something is happening to you in this life, don't think it is only the reaction of a previous life. It may be 20 lifetimes before. Here is a story from the Mahabharata. Dhritarashtra once asked Krishna at the end of the whole war. He asked Krishna, "My dear Lord, why did I suffer so much? Why did I see my 100 sons dying in front of me?" And Krishna told him a story. Krishna told him, 50 lifetimes back, Dhritarashtra was a hunter. And when he was a hunter 50 lifetimes back, he had gone hunting and he had shot the eyes of one bird, blinded the bird. And that bird had 100 eggs that it had laid. And this hunter had burnt all the eggs. So Krishna said, because of that, you are born blind this time and you have your 100 sons died. Dhritarashtra asked, come on, why it took 50 lifetimes? Why not the next lifetime? Why it took 50 lifetimes for me to realize this? And Krishna told him, to get one son, you need to do pious activities, a lot of piety. And to get 100 sons at a time, it took you 50 lifetimes to accumulate that much piety. And after 50 lifetimes, when you accumulated enough piety to have 100 sons, you had them, then the reaction came. This is known as delayed karma. So the laws of karma are very, very, you know, intricate, and they are very, very non-elusive. You cannot fool them. Then there is two types of karma. There is individual karma and there is collective karma. Individual karma means essentially one person goes through an experience and he suffers for it. You cannot share your karma. Valmiki Muni, when he was a hunter, Narada Muni came to him and asked him that, you know, why are you doing this? Valmiki Muni said that, I am doing it for my family. I am doing it to provide them. So Narada Muni said, if you are doing it to provide them, will they share your sinful reactions? Valmiki said, of course, they have to share. They will share. Narada Muni said, go and ask them. So he went to his wife and asked, you know, will you share my sinful reaction that I am going to get? You know, and Narada Muni showed him a PowerPoint presentation of all the sin that is waiting for him in hell, you know. He showed him a live demo. And then Valmiki was like really scared. So he went and asked his wife. The wife said, come on, you're supposed to maintain me. I don't know how you're going to maintain me. So it's your duty to maintain me. So if you do sin, that's your problem. The children said, come on, we are young now, we want to enjoy life, you know. You're supposed to feed us, you're supposed to provide us, that is your problem. So Valmiki Muni, that's when he realized that, my God, what I'm doing, I have to suffer myself. Then he decided to rectify himself. Then there is something known as collective karma. Collective karma essentially means that a lot of people come together and something happens, you know. But in essence, the whole concept of collective karma is a very interesting concept. When the tsunami happened in the south, there were some people who were in the water. They were scuba divers. They were swimming in the water. Can you imagine? The place where the water came from, they were there only. And when they were swimming in the water, they just experienced a jerk in a small push. They didn't know what it was. They just kind of neglected it and they kept swimming. And after half an hour, when they came out, they saw there's nothing. Everything is gone. So can you imagine? These are the people who are closest to the water. They should have suffered the most. But these are the people who experience no suffering at all. So the whole concept of karma is a very complicated concept. And it's a very accurate one. So when 10 people are walking in the street, if one of them have to go through a reaction, it's not that by mistake, dusre ko lag gaya, you know. Aisa nahi hota hai. The law of karma is precise. Just like, you know, if there are thousands of cows, you know, and one calf is released, the calf will run only to its mother. The calf will not get confused. Are ye bhi aisa hai, ye bhi aisa hai, you know. Abhi do mein se kaun hai, meri mummy. The calf doesn't get confused. The calf knows exactly where to go to, you know. That's how the law of karma is. The law of karma knows precisely whom to catch. You can't fool the law of karma, you know. And this is the next problem with the law of karma. One time one man went in a railway and he sat in a first class compartment. He had a second class ticket. So TC came and asked him, you know, show me the ticket. He showed. TC said, you have to pay a fine. He said, come on, why fine? I have a ticket. TC said, this is first class. So this fellow said, no, I don't know. I came new to the village, new to the city. The TC says, ignorance of law is not an excuse. You're supposed to know the law. Therefore, I said, the Bhagavad Gita is an instruction manual. You're supposed to read it. And for those who have not read it, now you have heard it. So essentially, the law is going to work whether you're ignorant of it or not ignorant of it. Therefore, it is very easy to live human life, but it is not easy to live human life properly, according to what is prescribed. Therefore, the laws of karma are very intricate and very accurate. Unless we know of them, we can't practice properly. So many people have this misunderstanding that good and bad karma cancel each other. And that is the reason they do good. Stock market mein idhar udhar pura lafda karke aake mandir mein donation dete hai. Black money ko clean karne ke liye jagah hai, purification, you know. Or they go and do some social activities, they feel that, you know, itna bura kiya, itna paap kiya, thoda sa punya karna chahiye. Kyun paap punya cancel ho jata hai? Aisa nahi hai. If you do 5 good and 2 bad, you have to enjoy the 5 good, reaction for the 5 good, and suffer for the 2 bad. It's not that they get cancelled. It's not that 5 good and 2 bad mean 3 good. Aisa nahi hota hai. That's not how the law of karma works, right? So therefore, when we are living in this world, we have to be extremely careful of what actions we do. Because every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, we can't do average. 5 actions and 5 reactions, you know. I can't bargain with the law of karma. It doesn't function like that. So therefore, one has to be extremely careful of how one lives one life. There's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of a king named Riga. One time Lord Krishna was playing with his friends and a ball fell into the well. And the friends were surprised. When they saw into the well, they saw a huge lizard. And the friends ran to Krishna and called him. So Krishna put his hand and picked up the lizard and brought him out. And the lizard transformed into a king. He was a king in the heavenly planets. So Krishna was, you know, saw him. You know, everybody saw him. They were shocked. They asked him for his story. And then he told what happened in his life. King Nriga, he was a very powerful king and a very charitable king. So one time he gave charity to one Brahmana. He gave 1 lakh cows to one Brahmana. And because he gave 1 lakh cows to one Brahmana, the Brahmana was very happy, blessed him. And then unfortunately what happened was, one of the cows from the 1 lakh came back to the place of King Nriga. So he gave that cow again to another Brahmana. He gave another 1 lakh cows along with this cow. So that first Brahmana came back and he said, my one cow is missing. And the king, he didn't realize that the one cow went there. The Brahmana said, no, you have cheated me. You have given my cow again to a donation. The king said, relax, I'll give you 1 lakh cows for this exchange for one cow. The Brahmana said, no, I want that cow only. And the second Brahmana said, no, I won't give this cow. And both of them started fighting. And finally, King Nriga, he dissatisfied both, you know. And the result was that when he, left his body, he had a choice. The choice was, he had to go through first the reactions for his bad or second the reactions for his good. He had to choose. So he said, let me go through the reaction for my bad. And the only bad thing that he did in his life was that he did this mistake of cheating both the Brahmanas, you know. And for that, he was born as a lizard in that well. And because he did so much piety, and because he also did a lot of worship of Lord Vishnu, he also got a chance to be born as a lizard in Vrindavan, in a place where Lord Krishna was, so that he gets delivered by the Lord. And then the rest of his life he was, enjoying the consequences of his good. But essentially, the law of karma, it works like this. I'll give you an example, an analogy, and we'll end. So the law of karma works like a granary. So in the olden times, they used to have these huge granaries where they would store grains. So you put grains from top and below there would be a tap where you would extract grains. So just imagine in a granary, you fill half the granary with sawdust. And then on top of that, you put grains, good quality grains in it. You open the tap, what will come out? Sawdust will come out. यू कहां जा रहे, अभी तो इतना चावल डाला, क्या हो गया? पहले ये सब निकलेगा, फर्स्ट इन फर्स्ट आउट, दिस इज प्रिंसिपल इन इलेक्ट्रॉनिक्स, यू नो. सो इट्स कॉल्ड फीफो, इज वन मोर कॉल्ड गीगो, गार्बेज इन गार्बेज आउट, यू नो, एंड गुड इन गुड आउट. सो इफ यू डू गुड एक्शंस इन द पास्ट, तो गुड रिएक्शंस विल कम आउट. And if you do bad actions in the past, bad actions will come out. So essentially, what is the law of karma? If you're going through suffering in our life, what does it mean? Kuch to gadbad kiya hai. Now people ask, Prabhuji, exactly kya gadbad kiya bata sakte hai kya? Exactly kya gadbad kiya humko bata chalega, to hum wo gadbad nahi karenge. The point is, you know, I always give this example of somebody who is bitten by a mosquito, to, you know, gets malaria. Now this fellow gets malaria, is naturally, you know, malaria ho gaya matlab mosquito has bitten. This fellow says, you know, what you're supposed to do when you get malaria? Go and take treatment, start the treatment. This fellow says, no, unless I kill that mosquito which bit me, tab tak main chalu nahi karunga treatment, you know. Tell me which mosquito bit me, I'll kill that mosquito, only then I'll start the treatment. Come on, first of all, what is the need of killing that mosquito? First of all, what is the need of finding that mosquito? What is now the need? Need is you need to get cured. So similarly, in our life, the moment we are going through a bad reaction means something we have done. Rather than trying to find out what exactly we have done, let us think of getting cured now. Rather than thinking of, you know, what has happened in the past, let us think about a future now. Therefore, the whole understanding is from a human perspective, what are we supposed to do now? Human life is like a junction. It's like a train junction. This is an opportunity for us to change our course of direction of progress. So, Krishna says in the Gita, Yamyam vape smaran bhavam tejanti anta kalevaram. He says, anta kaleja maameva smaran muktva kalevaram. He says, anybody who at the end of his life, anta kaleja maameva, Smaran Muktva Kalevaram. When such a person remembers me, Smaran Muktva, the moment he remembers me, such a person, he gets liberation, Muktva. He never comes back to the cycle of birth and death again. Yam Yam Vapi Smaran Bhavam Tajanti Ante Kalevaram means whatever one desires, whatever one remembers at the time of death, according to that, his next destination is shaped. And then he says, Antakala cha maameva smaran muktva kale. If somebody remembers me, if somebody remembers Krishna at the time of death, then he gets liberated from the cycle of birth and death. So the whole concept is that we have to learn to live life in such a way that we can remember God in the end of our life. Now, there are people who say that all life long I'll do masti. And last 1 second, just before I'm going to die, पूरा भक्ति करके भगवत धाम जाऊंगा ना. इम्पॉसिबल, इम्पॉसिबल. श्रील प्रभुपाद, द फाउंडर ऑफ इस्कॉन, ही वॉज टॉकिंग टू वन इमिग्रेशन ऑफिसर. दिस लेडी, शी जस्ट मेट हिम इन द एयरपोर्ट, यू नो, एंड शी आस्क्ड हिम अ क्वेश्चन. शी सेड, हाउ कैन वी रिमेंबर गॉड ऑल आवर लाइफ व्हाइल वी आर डूइंग ऑल दीज, यू नो, मंडेन एक्टिविटीज, ऑल दीज डिफरेंट एक्शंस. प्रभुपाद गिव अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग आंसर. ही सेड, ही आस्क्ड हर that while you are working all day long, are you conscious of your hairstyle? She said, of course, I am very conscious of my hairstyle. Prabhupada said, similarly, just like we are conscious of the way we look all day long, in spite of engaging in work, similarly, we should be conscious of what we think. We should be conscious of God in our lives. And if we are conscious of God all our life, then at the time of death, it's most natural to be conscious of God. Therefore, human life is a life of responsibility. Human life is not like animal life, which is a life of enjoyment. So human life is a life of responsibility. Rather than thinking that life is only meant for enjoyment, I'm not saying enjoyment is wrong, but the kind of enjoyment that leads to sinful reactions, that is wrong. So we need to be conscious of what really enjoyment is. And we need to be conscious of how we really need to live one's life in such a way that we are living life in alignment with God's laws, and in living in life in such a consciousness that at the time of death, we can easily remember God and go back to the spiritual world, get out of the cycle of birth and death. So with this, we will end today's session. But as I said, tomorrow session is wholly focused on the concept of a karma. How one can perfect one's life while living in this world. The concept of a karma is not about renunciation. The concept of a karma is not about running out of this world. The concept of a karma is not about stopping to work. It's not that tomorrow morning you'll go back and resign. Sab log chhod do. Sab hum jungle jayenge. Aisa nahi hai. That's not the purpose of a karma. The purpose of a karma is live while living in this world, live in such a way that you get no reactions. That is what we need to teach, learn, and that is what we need, what Krishna is wanting to teach us. So kindly please come tomorrow. And tomorrow we will be sharing with you all some practices. So I'm going to give you all recommendations of what would be ideal way to advance in your spiritual lives. You know, advance and practice in a way that is wholesome, at the same time that is very clear and directive. So please come with a mind to really absorb these thoughts and want to practice. Because I can assure you, if you'll practice based on these teachings, your life will definitely go in a totally different direction, and it will definitely have a very meaningful impact.